Okay, so are you ready to go on a little adventure with me today?
Always up for an adventure.
All right, excellent. The Church of Tinkerbell podcast.
Faith, imagination, the power of belief.
Love and acceptance to make the world a better place.
What would happen if we all just tried to see the world through the eyes of a child again, even for a moment?
It's a beautiful thought, isn't it?
It is.
The Church of Tinkerbell.
The Church of Tinkerbell. All right, I'm intrigued.
You know, every time we open up our sources, our goal is pretty simple. Find the clearest, most direct path for you to be genuinely well-informed on a topic.
Mm-hmm.
And today, we're doing a deep dive into Native American Heritage Month. We want to move way beyond just simple awareness and really get to a deeper understanding of the history, the sovereignty, and the contributions of Native nations.
And for this one, our main source is a really fantastic, comprehensive article from the Church of Tinkerbell.
A favorite source, for sure.
It is. And for anyone who might not be familiar, they have such a unique identity. It's this blend of, you know, radical kindness and whimsy on one hand.
Very glitter.
Exactly, glitter. But on the other, they tackle these incredibly serious educational and political topics with just a profound amount of care.
And that balance really works. It's not just a dry recitation of dates.
Not at all. Our goal here is to pull out the key historical, political, and cultural facts that show Native peoples not as, you know, relics of the past, but as living contemporary nations.
That's a critical point.
And the source makes an ethical point for us, too. We're pulling out facts about Native peoples for a non-Native audience, which just reinforces why it's so important for you, the listener, to go seek out and prioritize Native voices and creators directly.
Okay, that sets the stage perfectly.
Yeah.
So let's unpack the history of the month itself.
Yeah.
Because Native American Heritage Month, it sounds modern, but the roots go deep.
They really, really do. The whole idea of a formal observance started over a century ago. The source points to New York State back in 1916.
Wow.
Yeah, they recognized American Indian Day. And this was mostly due to the tireless work of a Seneca activist and scholar, Arthur C. Parker.
So that's one day in one state. That's a long way from a national month. When did that shift start to happen?
Well, it was a very gradual process. The real momentum built up in the later part of the 20th century. And by 1986, Congress had authorized a presidential proclamation for American Indian Week.
In November.
In November, that's right. They were rooting the observation in the fall.
So we have a week.
Yeah.
And then the final leap to the full month came just 4 years after that.
Precisely. In 1990, President George H.W. Bush signed the resolution that officially made November the first National American Indian Heritage Month.
And here is where the source makes, I think, its most critical distinction. It moves us beyond just seeing this as a heritage month.
Yes.
Yes.
This is the key insight. The source frames Native presence as being ancient, continuous, and A.
Hmm.
This is the most important part. Fundamentally, political.
Not just cultural.
Not just cultural or historical. And that forces you to grapple with the modern reality of actual governance.
I think for a lot of people, the word tribe defaults to something historical, almost anthropological.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying it's political. What does that actually mean today?
It means we are talking about active contemporary governments. The source gives us the number. There are currently 574 federally recognized tribes in the United States.
570.
And the key thing to understand is that these tribes are distinct nations. They have a formal, ongoing government-to-government relationship with the U.S. federal government. This month isn't about honoring historical figures. It's about honoring living sovereign nations.
Yeah, that one fact just changes everything. It reframes the whole relationship from a domestic history topic to something more like international relations. It's not just about what happened, but what's happening right now.
Exactly. And once you see that political reality, you can start to appreciate the enormous contributions that have so often been, you know, erased or minimized in school.
Okay, let's transition into those aha moments, because the list in the source, especially around food systems, is just, it's stunning.
It's amazing how much of what the entire world eats is rooted in indigenous agricultural science. These weren't just hunter-gatherers. We're talking about world-class bioengineers.
Well, the source highlights one thing that completely floored me.
Yeah.
Corn or maize.
Yeah.
It says it's a human-created plant, that it doesn't exist in the wild in the form we know it. It's the product of thousands of years of sophisticated breeding.
That fact alone points to a level of scientific understanding that predates what we think of as modern science. And corn is just the start. Think about beans, squash, the whole three-sister system. Potatoes, tomatoes, peppers, cacao.
I mean, can you imagine Italian food without tomatoes? Or Belgian chocolate without cacao?
You can't. Those global cuisines are built on a foundation of indigenous innovation.
And it wasn't just what they grew. It was how they managed the land. The source is clear that these ancient practices are now seen as solutions for our modern ecological crises.
This is where that idea of ancient knowledge, contemporary application really comes alive. We're talking about sophisticated practices like controlled burns for forest health, advanced terracing, intricate irrigation systems.
Things we're now studying for climate resilience.
Exactly. These are models for ecological restoration that sustained communities for millennia.
And from land to everyday technology, the source lists things we just take for granted.
It does. Things like snowshoes, which were revolutionary for travel, early syringe-style tools for delivering medicine, baby bottles, cradle boards. I mean, these are practical ergonomic designs for childcare.
And even sports. Lacrosse.
Right, which began as a deeply communal and spiritual contest, not just a game.
Then there's the influence on something as big as governance itself. We always hear about ancient Greece, but the source points to the Haudenosaunee Confederacy.
The Great Law of Peace, yes. This is a crucial piece of history. It established this federal structure among six distinct nations.
The Mohawk, Seneca.
Mohawk, Onondaga, Seneca, Oneida, Cayuga, and later the Tuscarora. And many historians argue it directly influenced early American democratic thought. It was a working model of federalism, shared governance with local autonomy, long before the U.S. Constitution.
It just underscores that point again, doesn't it? Treaties weren't just agreements with groups of people.
They were agreements between sovereign polities.
Which brings us to this really powerful paradox the source mentions. Native Americans serve in the U.S. military at higher rates per capita than any other ethnic group.
It's an incredible statistic, and that includes the famous Navajo and other Native code talkers in World War II, whose service was just absolutely foundational.
It's this deep, complex commitment to protecting their lands and communities, even in the face of so much historical injustice.
It demands recognition.
Okay, let's pivot now to what I think is a huge barrier to understanding this topic, which the source identifies as the myth of a single, monolithic Native American culture.
This is so, so important. We have to say the number again. 574 federally recognized tribes.
And that's not even counting state-recognized or unrecognized tribes.
Right, so we're talking about 574 distinct political entities with their own governance, their own stories, their own languages. It's a beautiful, overwhelming spectrum of humanity.
It really is.
The Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian has a framework called Native Knowledge 360 Degrees to fight this exact misconception. It stresses that Native peoples are diverse and, crucially, contemporary. They are not, as the source says, frozen in the past.
And you see that everywhere in the cultural renaissance happening right now.
Yeah.
Like the language revitalization efforts.
Which is so much more than just learning vocabulary. A language holds an entire worldview, a unique relationship to the land. Losing a language is losing a cosmos.
And the art, the beadwork, carving, pottery, these are living traditions that are constantly evolving.
They are. And then there's the literary impact. The source points to N. Scott Momaday's novel, Housemaid of Dawn.
The Pulitzer Prize winner in 1969.
Exactly. And that win just catalyzed what we now call the Native American Renaissance in literature. It blew the doors open for so many other essential voices.
But the source is very clear that we can't just celebrate the beauty. To really appreciate the culture means we can't romanticize it while ignoring the painful realities. Mm-hmm. We have to face the uncomfortable truths.
We must. We can't talk about sovereignty without talking about generational harm. The forced removals, like the Trail of Tears.
And the boarding schools.
The federal and church-run boarding schools, yes. Institutions with the explicit, horrific goal to, and this is the quote, kill the Indian, save the man.
Just devastating.
It was a systematic effort to sever children from their families, their languages, their entire culture. And that has created intergenerational trauma that communities are still healing from today.
And you can draw a direct line from that history to the systemic issues we see now. The poverty, the lack of infrastructure, the health disparities.
They are the direct results of centuries of policy. And this leads to the most urgent crisis the source identifies today. Missing and murdered Indigenous women and relatives. MMIW or MMIP.
The statistics are just horrifying. In some regions, Native women and girls face murder rates more than 10 times the national average. But what makes this crisis so complex?
It comes back to that political context we talked about. It's often a nightmare of overlapping and neglected jurisdictions.
What do you mean by that?
Well, depending on where a crime happens, on tribal land or off, and whether the perpetrator is Native or non-Native, jurisdiction can shift between tribal, state, and federal law enforcement.
Create gaps.
Huge gaps. It leads to delayed investigations, cold cases, and a total lack of reliable data. It's a systemic failure that allows perpetrators to act with impunity.
It's encouraging, though, that the source points to leadership trying to fix this.
Very. It highlights Secretary Deb Haaland, the first Native American cabinet secretary. She's made this a top priority, creating federal task forces and new units to improve data and coordinate responses to these cases.
It shows that celebrating heritage and fighting for justice have to go hand in hand. So for the non-Native person listening, what are the concrete next steps the source suggests? How do you move from just being aware to being an active, respectful ally?
The source gives a really clear three-step roadmap. And the first one is fundamental. It's learn whose land you're on.
And that's more than just a quick search online.
Oh, much more. Use a resource like Native Land Digital to learn the names of the tribal nations connected to your specific location. But then go deeper. Study the treaties that govern that land, what promises were made. That's the real history.
Okay, so that's step one. What's two?
Step two is to rethink familiar narratives. You have to actively challenge the comfortable stories we were all taught about Thanksgiving, about westward expansion, about the myth of the vanishing Indian.
And replace them.
And replace them with stories of Native survival, resistance, and creativity.
And the third step is the most practical.
It is. Support and advocate. Read, watch, and listen to Native voices. And when you can, buy directly from Native creators, artists, and businesses. And beyond that, advocate for policy change on issues like MMIP, land and water protection, and upholding tribal sovereignty.
So this whole deep dive, it started as a look at a Heritage Month, but it really became about the political and cultural reality of living nations. An invitation to celebrate, yes, but also to tell the truth and to deepen your own relationship with the land you're on.
Exactly. And if there's one final thought to leave you with, it's this powerful idea from our source. Native history is not a chapter that ended. So the question for you is, how will you integrate the truth that Native nations are here sovereign, diverse, and very much alive into your own learning and your own actions long after November is over?
Thanks for going on this little adventure with me today.
Anytime.
And listener, keep sprinkling that fairy dust, all right? We'll see you next time.